Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
This year, I'm seeing reports of 5, 6, even double-digit yield increases.
Welcome to Ag Bioscience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. Here is your host, Agrinovis CEO, Mitch Frazier.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. New data from AgFunder News shows that ag biologicals are used by just under half of U.S. farmers. One company has a unique perspective on the ag biological market, and they join us today. Welcome Dr. Alex Cochran, CTO of DPH Biologicals. Alex, welcome to Ag Bioscience.
Thank you very much for having me, Mitch.
Alex, we have a lot to unpack. I think the most important piece, we have to start at the foundation. What are ag biologicals and what role do they have in modern production agriculture?
It's a great question. And honestly, it's probably a question a lot of growers have because a lot of people throw out terms for biologicals. And I would say that definition is kind of all over the place. At DPH, we define biologicals as things that are both living and non-living. We have a heavy focus on living active ingredients, microbial active ingredients, but there are non-living biologicals as well, things like seaweed extracts, amino acids, and other tools that are used in this space. And they can be either biocontrol technologies, which would be in the U.S. registered with the EPA, or they could be agronomic tools that are incorporated as biofertilizers, soil amendments, and other technologies that are incorporated in the grower's operation. In terms of the growing focus in this space, it's really interesting. There's a lot of different reasons for it. Technologies aren't new. So, you know, we've had biological technologies deployed in the U.S. and in other parts of the world for many years, actually. But the growing focus on these technologies is kind of different depending on where you're at. So, you know, certainly in the U.S., you know, we see growers wanting to push through and drive more productivity. So, you know, and particularly in certain areas, that push has been earlier than other areas. So, like, for example, I spent and worked many years in California and encountered, you know, going back early in my career, a lot of biologicals being used in the farm, which at that time were very new to me, and seeing the adoption by growers out there much earlier than I remembered growing up in the Midwest. In other parts of the world, places like Europe, it's necessity. So regulatory pressure is driving out a lot of the synthetic tools that are available with both pesticides and fertilizers. They put major restrictions on technologies and growers are looking for alternatives and biologicals are oftentimes a part of that alternative tool set. And then you go to places like Brazil. So Brazil has the fastest growing biologicals adoption in the world. Incredible adoption there across a whole segment of crops, both row crops and specialty. And there, a lot of it has to do with things like pest pressure. So Brazil, very intense pest pressure. That requires a lot of different tools to manage. And biologicals are part of that tool set that have become an essential part of that tool set for those growers. So depending on where you're at in the world, there are different reasons for the focus there.
There's so much conversation, so much venture, so much private equity has flown into the biological space. When you look at the setup today of the ag economy, we saw, I think it was Farm Credit's, one of their data analytics groups put out a report that showed the steepest 2-year net decline in net farm income just a few months ago. We see corn hit its 4-year low in Q3. Is this economic pressure really a tailwind for biologicals where you have this labyrinth or this portfolio of inputs the farmer has to optimize? And now, rather than just having a couple levers to pull, there's now multiple levers to pull with biologicals.
Absolutely. I think biologicals can certainly be a part of that solution for growers. And we see that. We see growers wanting to really maximize yield. So, I mean, you know, there's multiple approaches that you can take. Obviously, the most obvious one is cut back on inputs for growers. But we also see growers wanting to up invest and out yield the depressed commodity prices that they're facing. You know, if they can drive above their baseline, that can make up for some of that loss per acre for things they can't control, like market forces around commodity prices. That's certainly something we see with biologicals and interest there to drive for greater efficiency. We see a lot of value in pairing biologicals with traditional practices, and you can oftentimes derive a synergy from that, whether it's biocontrol or biofertility. And that can help the grower. You can kind of get at both driving yield, but also cutting back a little bit on inputs at the same time. So biologicals can be an important part of that solution for growers to manage through this tough farm economy.
What would be a good example of that? Where were you seeing that in the field today where A plus B equals 2X?
A really good example, we have a biofertility technology called SP1, and we're in the process of launching a new formulation of that called Amplifex. And we've been working closely with distributor partners to demonstrate that you can cut back on starter fertilizer. So many growers use 10-34-0 or 6-24-6 starter fertilizer at planting. We've been able to demonstrate is that they can use, you know, basically half the amount of starter fertilizer they would have traditionally applied with that biofertility technology. And oftentimes they're seeing upside, a strong lift and yield tied to that combination, while at the same time carving back on that fertilizer that they would have traditionally applied. So people have to warm up to that. I mean, you know, it's always tough when you're changing farming practices. The people that use starter fertilizer have used it for many, many years as an essential part of their operation. So you have to prove it. And that's one thing in a tough farm economy, one thing that's critical for biological manufacturers like DPH and others is you have to very clearly describe the ROI for the grower, what's in it for them, and have very credible data that supports the what's in it for them to even get through the door. And, you know, that's been a part of our focus is being able to very clearly describe and demonstrate ROI for the grower so that they get what they, you know, what we tell them our products will deliver.
Your ROI calculus has been one. It's fun to kind of take a peek behind and hear some of the work you're doing. I think the important piece here is when we talk biologicals, when we talk ROI calc, when we talk about this macro force of just a tough macro economic environment, the reality is it's a lot of things. Yes. You talk about a starter fertilizer adjuvant or addition, but there's also seed treatment, there's foliar, there's all kinds of different ways in which ag biologicals are permeating this market.
Absolutely. And you know, I have a long background in having developed seed treatment technologies, both at Syngenta and Corteva before DPH, and have seen firsthand the difference they make for genetics and helping genetics perform to the best levels possible. And then on the foliar side, you know, foliar biologic biostimulants have become an essential tool for many growers. And I think oftentimes people think just specialty crops. And again, from my experience in California, I saw those widely deployed, but you're seeing it in row crops as well. You know, many growers are taking that opportunity again to drive productivity further. And that's not just with things applied to the soil or on the seed, but also foliar as they go out and make those applications either for post herbicides or that fungicide application, which has become so common now for many growers. It's also a great opportunity to incorporate biological technologies.
What's ahead for the biological market? We'll dig into it right after this. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
A healthy company is a blessing, but a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help. With health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of healthcare has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. We invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. We're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infbhealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience, talking with Dr. Alex Cochran, CTO of DPH Biologicals. Alex, we have talked about what are biologicals, how this market is moving in the current economy, but there have been a lot of movements just in the biologicals market itself. A lot of M&A. We've seen Corteva make big moves with Symborg and Stoller. We've seen a lot of different folks in and out of this market. Give us a sense. How does a company like DPH really begin to differentiate itself amidst all this noise, amidst all these changes? How do you position yourself differently?
First and foremost, it's focus. So we are purely a biological company. We're very focused on, you know, we actually have intentionally streamlined our portfolio to focus on a handful of technologies to really go deep and be able to work with our retail and distributor partners to help grow those technologies. So investing in a very focused way in a handful of technologies. And that's the other piece too is, you know, for us, we've had a strong commitment to doing a broad array of field studies, again, to have a great deal of confidence that the technologies that we deliver to the grower ultimately do exactly what we say. You're not going to win them all. No technology wins them all. But if you can at least come with a credible story on where does the technology best fit versus where it doesn't, and I think sometimes that's a little bit of what has troubled this space. Sometimes people have overpositioned technologies. We really pride ourselves in being very transparent about where these technologies work best. And frankly, more importantly, where they really don't fit very well. And that's part of that relationship with our distributor partners.
When you look at this equation or this environment in which you're operating, I'm always amazed when a new technology, whether it be software, hardware, or science, comes to market and says, we can increase yield X by Y, 3 bushels, 5 bushels an acre, whatever it is. And it's such a complex equation. You look, it's weather, it's soil, it's everything that's going into that acre. It's really difficult to be able to extract one variable and say, this did that. And so to hear this idea that, you know, telling somebody this is where it won't work is just as important as saying, hey, this is where it will work.
No doubt. I often use the analogy that, at least with living microbial active ingredients, I treat it from my past at Corteva like breeding. So I'm not a breeder, but I work very closely with breeders as a part of my past roles in development. And fact of the matter is environment does play an enormous role in the performance of these technologies, no different than genetics. And, you know, that's why it's important to be aggressive in what you do in the field. And that's often a struggle, especially for small companies. I mean, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is the field development portion of what goes on in R&D is oftentimes the most expensive part of what you do when you're bringing a new technology. It is, and there's really no streamlined way to get after that. You need to sample a lot of environments, roll up a lot of data, and then make good decisions on that positioning based on what that data is telling you. But it's brute force, it's expensive, but it's really important.
What are you seeing from customers as you're out talking with them in that decision cycle, but then more importantly at harvest, what are you seeing?
Good example. We had the good fortune to work with a large seed company partner exploring the value of a technology. We have a biological fungicide seed treatment technology called Companion Max Seed Treatment. And in testing done with them the past year on corn, we saw across two different hybrids, 20 unique locations, a 3.5 bushel lift on top of their current base, which frankly is the R&D person. I was tickled. It actually surprised me. I mean, we expect yield increases, but that was, especially given what was a really dry spring, really minimal disease pressure for the most part across many of those locations, that was really impressive. We're repeating that work this year, and we'll see how things play out. We certainly had more moisture this spring, so you would anticipate more disease pressure, hopefully a similar or even better response. On the biofertility side, so the technology that I mentioned earlier, the SP1 Amplifex, we're just starting to get that data rolling in now. But what I'm seeing is actually significantly improved performance above our traditional baseline of, say, a 4 bushel lift across all locations. And again, there's a whole range of performance across all those locations. But this year, I'm seeing reports of 5, 6, even double-digit yield increases.
Wow.
So a lot of it depends. This year was obviously it was highly variable planting. And I think that's going to factor into what comes back. So some of those locations, and that's something we'll pay attention to when we roll up the data. I think time of planting had a big impact on the degree of response that we're seeing.
Alex, you've had an amazing journey, Syngenta, Corteva, DPH. You've seen this biologicals market evolve. I mean, to your point, from specialty crop to row crop, from Europe to North America, South America. Give us a sense. Where are we in the overall market maturation? Are we still early innings? Are we mid-game? Where does this cycle today?
The technologies have come a long way. And I will say, when I first started my career and began to encounter these technologies, at least as a plant pathologist, I was highly skeptical. And I oftentimes, you know, we'd be asked to compare technologies that were in development at that time at Syngenta to other technologies, including biocontrol technologies. And oftentimes the performance was a lot less than traditional synthetic technologies. What I've seen is a tremendous maturation of these technologies and really improving. Depending on the situation, in some cases, they can be a drop-in replacement for synthetic technologies. But more often than not, I think what's really improved is the grower's ability to incorporate those technologies as a part of a program, incorporate them into their mainstream operation. And like the situation that I described earlier, where you're blending the biofertilizer and the synthetic fertilizer together, and 1+1 is giving you 3. And that's true both for biocontrol and on the biofertility side. So I think that's the big change that I see. You know, overall, the space is also maturing. So, you know, we've seen a lot of startups flood into the space. You start to see some consolidation now. That all is, you know, very natural part of how this market is evolving. But I think what you're seeing is, and I appreciate the Ag Funder update at the beginning, is you're seeing these technologies become a mainstream part of growers' operations, which is really exciting, obviously, as a biologicals manufacturer. And I think that will continue to accelerate, certainly through the remainder of this decade and beyond.
Alex, time for one more question. I think this is an important one. What's on the horizon? What's on the horizon, certainly for DPH, but maybe even broader? Sure. What do you see on the horizon for biologicals?
I'll speak for DPH first. I mean, we're very excited. So just in the last month, we've had multiple approvals from the EPA for new biocontrol technologies.
Congrats.
Thank you very much. So we'll be piloting those in 2025 with different partners and then look to fully launch those through 2025 and into 26 planting. So that's very exciting. We're also making a push into Brazil. So we expect our first registration of Companion Max seed treatment in Brazil in 2025 as well. And that's certainly a big expansion for us as a small company. Beyond that, for the whole biological space, you know, I think, again, there's multiple things going on, both from a regulatory perspective, also from a consumer perspective. You know, consumers are looking for more sustainable practices at the farm gate. And biologicals, I think, can be a part of that solution. And obviously, sustainability is a big hairy word and means different things to different people.
Absolutely.
But the bottom line is I see further maturation of biologicals, hopefully moving from 50% to 100%. And go back to the example I've given before, you know, in the seed treatment world, biologicals have become an essential part of a seed treatment recipe. And in fact, you know, I think growers may not even be aware that they have biologicals on their seed that are a key part of that recipe. You know, I go back to my time at Corteva where we have multiple biological inoculants that are part of a very complex seed treatment recipe and are very important to the performance of that recipe. So impacting tens of millions of acres and very much a mainstream technology. I see that continuing to accelerate again through this decade and certainly beyond. We also see regulatory pressure. So, I mean, just a couple of days ago, it was announced New York State announced that they're going to be eliminating neonic seed treatments 2029 and beyond on all row crops. That's going to force some new alternatives to move into that space. We saw that in Europe. Part of Corteva at the time when that impacted Europe and it forced growers to find alternative technologies. Biologicals have been a part of that solution there for many years.
Alex, the work you're doing, the work the team at DPH is doing, incredible, incredibly important, particularly in a down ag economy to advance yield without substantial cost increase. Dr. Alex Cochran, CTO, DPH Biologicals. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
And thanks for joining us on Ag Bioscience. You can always get the latest Ag Bioscience news and insights from discussions just like this, but wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget, you can always learn more online at agrinovusindiana.com. On behalf of the entire Agrinovus team, I'm Mitch Frazier saying thanks for joining us. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovus Indiana, hosted by Mitch Frazier, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, photography and design by Kaylee Kerr. If you liked today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovusindiana.com.